Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Josh Brown.
Hello there.
Hello, both chaps. Now, we're only, let me see, it's 4 hours and 47 minutes until the reveal of what Abandoned is. And who even knows what that's going to be? Is it Silent Hill? Is it Metal Hill? Is it Silent Gear Solid? Who even knows? It's almost definitely nothing, but I have downloaded the Abandoned app, and I'll wait and see. Very quick thoughts on the state of Abandoned. Are you guys going to be tuning in at 8 o'clock to see what it is?
I'm just going to get your response. Like, I'm not going to tune in. I'm just going to see what you say about it on Twitter or maybe in the DMs, and That's all I need to know, and I'll enjoy it through the medium of Scott Tilford.
The medium, one of 2021's best games. Ben Roy, do you believe?
I'm trying to find Hassan Cameron's location. It's kind of like that scene in Goldeneye where I'm pinging different servers as I'm trying not to be found by the FBI at the same time, because I want to find this actor man if he's not real, when he's not real, and it's big Kojima comes out of nowhere, out like Kool-Aid Man.
Like Randy Orton.
Yeah, just like weird, I don't know that right now. Like weird things, like I saw someone say that the font they're using is the same font they've used in the Last of Us menus. And
oh,
stuff.
Brother, the font that's on the website is called San Antonio. San Antonio, the street in Texas. There's a street called Silent Hill right next to it. Just do whatever you need to do to make it work. But still, for this week's podcast, we just put the question out. We thought we'd just see what people want us to talk about, because we're still in that sort of holding pattern between any bigger releases coming out. And thanks to everybody for sending in their questions, some absolutely brilliant questions. So we'll get through as many as we can. First one from Michael Hillman. Why are the Metal Gear Solid games so much better than the Resident Evil ones?
I have a response to that. One second.
I don't know if overall.
And Josh, for the audio listeners, has gone.
He has gone. He's been replaced with his own name tag and nothing else. I don't know how to coax him back unless the Abandoned is actually Metal Gear Solid. But I don't know. What do we think about this? If you compared the entire franchise, is Metal Gear a better series of games than Resident Evil? I think it is.
Well, it's weird, man, because I feel like I'm in the middle here, because on the one hand, in one corner, I've got Scott Tilford, the biggest Metal Gear Solid fan I know, and on in the other corner, Ben Roy Turner, the biggest Resident Evil fan I know. So I'm excited to see you two battle it out, because for me, personally, I'll get my opinion out of the way first. Mm-hmm. I think it's the most uninteresting one, but I just think they're so different, aren't they? They're so completely different games. Yeah. I love them both. I wouldn't even want to compare them. Wouldn't even want to do it. Wouldn't want to compare two things I love and have them fight to the death, which is what we're doing here. So for me, I don't think Metal Gear... I don't know. I'm in the middle. I'm a conscientious objector to this.
I would almost be like that with Josh, but the problem is Metal Gear's dead. There's no fight to death. Metal Gear's dead. It failed. It burned. It's gone.
It definitely didn't fail, but it is gone.
Metal Gear survived. The next series in the MGS series, dead and died and failed.
For all you know, Metal Gear Solid could be behind the curtain waiting to come out, smash the glass. It's only four hours away.
For me, it's weird. I've made a living off basically talking about Metal Gear into a microphone or whatever for however long now I've been here. I love them for different reasons. You can have different kids and just like treat them. I don't know what I'm doing here. But look, if I was to put one above the other, Resident Evil, I think, is better overall. I think there's more. I think you can get more out of it. I think we have got more out of it. If maybe Metal Gear wasn't locked to Kojima, we might get more out of it like that way. But the fact that Resident Evil can be so much, it's gone through so many creators and we've had so many games, some awful and crap and some brilliant, I think I'm going to go with Resident Evil here.
The thing is, as much as I adore Metal Gear, Metal Gear Solid is like my favorite game of all time. I think as an overall franchise, you look at the strides that Resident Evil 4 did for us, like how much it advanced the medium and how much something like Resident Evil 2 remake is so stellar. Resident Evil is right up there. I think if I was going to pick one or the other, my side would be Metal Gear. The only way to decide this is Josh Brown, then we'll move on. Josh Brown, you must pick a side. You must cast your coin.
Do I have to pick a side?
I think you're going to have to.
Rocky won it, it's where not we binding. Both knock each other out, and then kind of like we both win. I go the 10 rounds.
A three-way knockout punch. Unless you'd really rather abstain, I'm curious what your gut tells you.
Me and Scott are old Snake and Shalashaska fighting on top of a... Shalashaska and Wesker fighting on top of a giant submarine right now, waiting for you to save one of us.
Well, okay, here we go. Metal Gear Solid, right, they're both childhood favorites. It's just so difficult. They both have two of my favorite games of all time. Metal Gear Solid 2 and Resident Evil 4 are like just two of the all-timers. But if I had to go for a full franchise, if I had to kill one, for instance, if I was on a desert island, and you're like, Josh, you can only have one franchise to replay over and 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 over again, I think it would be Resident Evil, just because there's so many more and more good games. And I also agree with Ben Roy that I think the future is brighter for Resident Evil than it is for Metal Gear Solid. And that's the only reason why.
Do you know what? I think, like, yeah, my gut also says that I could replay the Resident Evils more than I could replay the Metal Gears, because as much as I played through Metal Gear Solid 1 a hell of a lot in 2 and 3, 4, ain't no one... I tried replaying 4. It's 8 hours of cutscenes and, like, 20 minutes of gameplay. And I love that thing. But it's very hard to go back through. And it's not like we're replaying Peace Walker or Phantom Pain very much. So I might have to concede.
I must own up on this for I don't know what you would say, journalist integrity, and I'm never going to be a journalist. I know this little troll, Michael, that was in this question. I saw the little name, and he's smiling right now as he wrote this question while sitting on the toilet. So you've been defeated, Michael. Metal Gear sucks.
We're not going to go that far, but we will move on. Next question is from Tom Hardy, who says, do you think we'll ever see an open world on the same level as Red Dead 2 before GTA 6?
Rockstar,
the only ones who can do this.
I think our only opportunity for something on the level of a Red Dead or a GTA 6 until GTA 6 comes out was actually Cyberpunk. I think that was our shot at getting a super detailed, super big, super expansive, contained open world. And obviously, I don't think that went down. They shagged it, to put it. That wasn't going to be quite as straightforward, but yeah, they shagged it. You know, they kind of messed that opportunity up. And I don't think we'll get another one until we get GTA 6, because yeah, we've got Starfield next year, but if the rumors are to be believed, that isn't one big open world in the conventional sense. It's going to be a bunch of different planets. So I don't know if that necessarily counts. And yeah, I do think Cyberpunk was our chance to get something of a Rockstar level, of a Rockstar quality. And obviously, they shagged it.
I mean, Rockstar are one of the only companies that can afford to spend that much money over that much time on a world, on just a world, and prioritize it over everything else, and have GTA Online be this sort of financial backbone so they can afford to keep doing it. I couldn't think of how many other studios are even in the position to be able to do that. Like, it's the only other company that comes to mind in terms of that level of detail is Naughty Dog, and I don't think they would ever do a full city-based open world thing. It's not like we're going to get Jack 4, but like done through the lens of like a GTA-sized world. Ben, what would you think?
If we got Jack 4, I would quit. First of all, just want to say that.
I would rejoice.
But yeah, Cyberpunk was probably that one that was going to be the thing, and then was restricted and cut down so much by the end, we got like a sort of a husk of you're not breathtaking. But like, I think about who's got, I don't know, suck my ass money, just come at me, bro. I'm just thinking Phil's probably the only one out there who could produce it. That amount of money. Like, sure, Naughty Dog has the talent maybe, but does Jim Ryan have that in his back pocket? No, because Shuhei Yoshida likes expensive ramen.
Just to very quickly explain, that term was suck my ass money. Carry on, Josh.
I was going to say, following on from what Ben Roy said there, I do think if there is one game with a chance of doing it, and we've seen nothing of it, so there's nothing really to back this up other than franchise pedigree. But maybe Fable, maybe the next Fable might have a lifelike big world. Like, obviously, you know, I don't want to judge it too much on the previous games because it's a whole new development, but maybe they go down that route. Maybe they make this massive open world kind of lifelike sandbox to explore. I don't know if that's what they're going to do or whether they're going to pump all the money into that, but maybe.
Maybe. I mean, I guess I think of also like what Obsidian are doing with Avowed. I guess when I think of like a Rockstar open world, especially the on the level of Red Dead 2, it's like, well, that is tons of bespoke animations. It's tons of like NPC cycles and AI routines and all these different things that I think are way more intricate than an Obsidian open world, than a Bethesda open world. It feels like a very specific Rockstar trait. You're sort of doing single player campaign animation on a, on the biggest scale possible. And that's one of the hardest things to do.
Imagine if Phil gave Kojima suck my ass money and then Kojima went...
using that. I mean, we can, but the love of God.
And Kojima literally went... And I mean, he... like, you could imagine what Death Stranding would have been if you could have gone into these cities properly instead of them just being a hole in the wall. You know what I mean? Like, he's got the sort of like the imagination and the scope there. And I think that at one point, the budget just sort of like went... No, you need to. You can have 2D holograms of some of your friends, and that's it. You've got to get the game out of the door. You can't go into the cities apart from one or two broken ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole game was a bunch of mountains, and then the rest of it, that was all.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason for that, though, because like you mentioned there, Death Stranding and The Phantom Pain are both, you know, really great sandboxes, really great open world games, but they're not like lived in places. And
yeah, there's
I think
no
that's
environment.
Yeah. I don't think I'd trust Kojima to do human NPCs. Like, imagine just normal people.
He
in
could
a
not
Kojima
write
Kojima game.
Normal
he couldn't
people.
Rein himself in. No way. No. Like, even like the Jeff Keighley's in the director cameos in Death Stranded, they're not real
the
people.
Nearest
they're
thing,
celebrity cameos. You know what I mean?
The nearest thing that Kojima had to a conversation between two just regular humans, not superheroes, not like overroided, like, you know, military people, was that really weird relationship quest in Death Stranding with the worst dialogue, the worst acting in human history. That a whole game of that, I mean, I would take it, but a whole game of that would be abysmal. So yeah, I pretty much know. I don't really think anyone else can do what Rockstar do, and it'll just be a case of waiting until whenever GTA 6 comes along. Next question from Steve8K. Is Silent Hill overhyped? I understand it's an oldie but a goodie. However, I feel the fanfare over it now stems from the magic of Kojima and what he made with PT. Thoughts?
Look, it's basically because it's been gone so long, and then Absinthe makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes.
If it was still going with the trash that they had towards the end, none of us would care. But some people would care because everyone, there's something for everyone, right? But the fact that it's been gone for so long, I love those first few games. The ones afterwards, I can't be dealing with.
Right.
But I think it's literally just the space and the time, and the fact like it's one of the only things special anymore. Like,
do you think
of, like, what's been gone? Sort of
yeah. Thing. Do you think it's because, like you said, it's like he said, it's an oldie but a goodie, and like you said, it's been gone for so long. But then the thing that reignited the love of it was PT. It was this like mythical demo that got cancelled. So you've inside it psychologically, you've got this thing that we were all denied, the one that got away and stuff
it's
like
the
that.
Perfect match. Yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's like the perfect trifecta.
I don't know, boys. I fully agree with
you. Do you think the love
that.
Is in the originals? I think it is entirely Kojima and PT. I don't think it's the originals.
Oh, see, I disagree, man. Like, just because I agree, obviously, like the later Silent Hill games, anything after 4 is kind of very niche, very much for the fans if they find anything in it. Like, they're not mainstream, they're not beloved in the same way that the originals are. But as someone who got to Silent Hill very late, like, I only played through the first 3 games properly since I was too scared to play them as a kid, like back in 2015 or something.
Okay.
And for me, the magic was still there. Like, I got a great experience from them, especially 2, which I think definitely holds up as like one of the best survival horror games of all time. So I think, you know, even removed from PT, even removed from Kojima, like the magic of those first 3 games, especially, and the promise and the potential that never got fulfilled is enough to sustain it as this top tier franchise that people want to come back. Because even before Kojima got involved, even before we had a taste of what PT could be, people were saying, like, bring Silent Hill back in a big way. You know what I mean? They weren't pleased with those games. They were pining for a return. And that's partly what made PT so special. Not only was it very good, not only did it have this great creator behind it, but it was an answer to a demand that had been there for, like, the long time. So I do certainly think it's both parts. But I feel like even on its own, without, you know, the recent happenings, I feel like there'd still be a hunger for it because those games just, at least for my money, are just some of the best horror games going.
Well, it's like a certain strand of horror that I don't think hardly anyone else does that well, like a type of body horror, a type of Eastern horror. Like, I mean, and plus, like, you're twinning it with Hideo Kojima. Like, I feel like online, the version of Hideo Kojima that exists is this, like, can do no wrong Adonis of, like, masterful storytelling, masterful character writing and everything else. And he does nail some original ideas. And I love the guy. I'm like, obviously, I said I love Metal Gear Solid. Death Stranding was brilliant. But at the end, for me, it fell apart. But I wonder if that's also part of the hype. It's like, oh my God, this phantom perfect game, this perfect twinning of this mastermind with this insane IP could only, you know, be the best thing ever, but there's not really been any advancement on it in years.
I think it's a bit like Splinter Cell, man, where it's been gone for so long and those first couple of games were so good that I'm looking at the HD collection on PS3 every day on eBay, like, shall I? I'm waiting to see what Hassan Karaman's got to say to me tonight and if he's going to come out with the goods. And if he doesn't come out with the goods, I'm going to send the lads round and then I'm going to buy that collection. I'm going to play those first two games again because I want them.
Send the lads around to Konami and tell them to put the fog back in Silent Hill because they took it out of the HD collection.
That was the Xbox version, so that one's dead and done forever. But okay, the PS3 version is actually all right. For some reason, they're just different. I don't know why.
That is weird, yeah, because that was the whole thing when the HD collection came out and everyone was like, oh my God, we can finally revisit this stuff. And then the no fog thing did the round.
They fixed PS3 and let Xbox 360 just
die. That's good. They should definitely put that out as a modern day remaster trilogy thing. But yeah, Silent Hill, who even knows? I mean, I guess it's a mix. It's a mix of everything. But at the same time, underneath all of it is that Silent Hill should be a presence in the gaming industry. Next question from Steve, who says, I miss movie video games. What game based on a movie from the last few years would you guys have liked to play? I'm going to go with John Wick.
Yes, John Wick's a great show. Like a proper John Wick done in an updated engine of John Woo's Stranglehold. That's what I want to see.
Oh, that's too much shooting, that. I would have it
too
on...
Too much shooting.
Give me Sleeping Dogs Melee Combat. Give me Jet Li's Rise to Honor. Give me Jackie Chan Stuntmaster. Give me all those melee-focused martial arts games. Give me Sifu with a John Wick skin, and you're pretty much there for me.
Interesting.
I want to give me the Minority Report game. This is how much I love martial arts brawlers. The Minority Report game was genuinely brilliant, and it was like just full on brawler, nothing to do with the movie, but you could just throw people through plate glass windows. You could do roundhouse kicks in slow motion. It was great.
I would like to play the video game version of The Happening, and I would like to try and dodge the wind and try and save Hot Dog Man and make sure he doesn't die. Because that movie, watched it the other night.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It doesn't.
Why is it still happening in 2021?
Because 2021 is the perfect time for the happening. And when I had a power cut and had to go to a friend's house and watch the happening, I'm going to watch the happening rather than sit with candlelight, reading The Walking Dead, drinking whiskey, basically in the dark.
I love that your two options were to sit in the dark or watch the happening. I would have left the house. I would have just gone back to my own place and sat in the darkness.
Dude, we should get, it's not a movie, so I'm kind of cheating the question, but I'm still adamant that we need this Mandalorian game. The Mandalorian almost works better as a game than it does a TV show.
Oh, it's literally a game anyway.
It is structured like it, man. So I feel like it's, I'm pretty sure there was a rumor a little while ago about it potentially finally happening. So I hope, I hope that finally happens.
I would have done, I mean, the entire run of the MCU, like, you know, we had initial few games with like Thor and Captain America. I actually quite liked the first Captain America game that went alongside the first movie, but the whole rest of that MCU, there were no tie-in games. There was nothing that took advantage of all those big fights or anything. Like, the nearest thing to, you know, having fun with those characters in video game form was like the Lego tie-ins. And then it was like, eventually Spidey came back, but I would have loved some MCU stuff, maybe per game.
Maybe one of the later stage Nicolas Cage films when he's kind of had a little renaissance, like maybe let me play Mandy or
I was gonna say the Mandy game.
Whenever I see whenever I get to see Pig, I want to just find Pig. I want to find that little pig and protect my pig.
I don't know what Pig is, but I know it's a thing. Josh, do you want to play the Mandy game?
No, I don't want to watch Mandy, mate. Never mind, play the Mandy.
Mandy was the best film of that year.
It might have
maybe in opposite land.
Hey. Speaking of opposite land, next question doesn't make sense, but it is the next question from Coach Marv, who said, I decided to make my 2021 my year of retro, collecting and playing essential video games I either missed out on or didn't fully play. What quote-unquote essential video game have you not yet played that you really should or really want to at some point? I think at this point in our collective careers, we've plugged most of these gaps, but... Josh got a little face on, so I don't know if Josh.
You say that, man, but there's a lot I'm embarrassed to admit that I've never properly dabbled in. Obviously, you've been telling me forever to play the original Final Fantasy VII, which I definitely need to get to at some point. But on top of that, it's kind of like mostly just Nintendo stuff. Like, I'm so far behind on Nintendo franchises in general. Like, I played my second ever Zelda this year. Like, I need to catch up on a lot of Zeldas, especially in Metroid. Yeah, Metroid is something I've just not touched apart from Inoue on the very first one, which is not a good first impression.
Not for the love of God, just avoid the first one. Just go to Super Metroid. You'll be fine. You don't need the first one ever.
So you say.
It has arrived. I've been curious about this one for quite a while. Just for some reason, I never wanted to put that many coins down for it, but I won. Alice Madness Returns. There you go.
When you put this in our group chat, I was just like, I mean, yeah, I remember when American McGee was like doing the rounds. I'm sure you had two or three games, but that was a big deal.
I played the first one on PC like 100 years ago when I was a personal computer gamer. But I just never got around to this one. I think it came out like around the time of like Gears 3 and stuff like that, and it just sort of passed me by, went into the ether, but I was, you know what, that's a game that exists and I've never played it and I'm going to play that one soon.
Fair. Mine's absolutely Half-Life. I've just, as much as I've tried to play Half-Life 2, I got quite far through Half-Life 2, but it just never clicks, and I don't know if it's because I never got through 1, but I just, there's something about the way those games feel, that sort of, it's also Left 4 Dead, because it's the way that game engine feels, it just doesn't feel satisfying to me.
You don't have a source, you're not a saucy boy.
I just don't like the way that it feels, and I remember I went to Half-Life 2, I played it on PlayStation 2, which I know will make some people's ears bleed, but I played Half-Life 2 on PlayStation 2, and it was after, Halo on the original Xbox, it was after that big sort of push for console first-person shooters, and I get the whole thing of Half-Life's not a dedicated first-person shooter, whatever, but it didn't work, it didn't click with me, and I've gone back to it. I tried it on the Orange Box. I've tried it on my Series X. I just keep trying, and it never feels good. And that's a franchise that I've tried and bounced off. Left 4 Dead, I played a demo back in the day, and that was as far as I got. So I've not even...
Crazy.
I don't even care. I don't even know. I've looked at the Back 4 Blood footage. Don't care.
Have you officially got one of those Steam Deck things? Are you getting one?
I'll put my name down for one. I guess it'll be coming some point next year.
Play Half-Life 2 on that, because... Okay. It will just play that on the go or something. I mean, you play Half-Life 2 backwards combat if you've got the Orange Box as well. I did that last year.
That's what I mean. You can play it on Xbox right now, and I have done. I just, I just don't, nothing about that world or the way that it feels, I don't get it. It doesn't do anything for me.
It burns us. Go on, John.
No, somewhere, somehow, Rich Hudson is sensing a disturbance in the force.
He just looked up to the side. Yes. He knows something's wrong.
The back of his neck just kind of tingle hearing you say these words. That is that's a struggle of mine, especially because you've tried it a few times. I kind of get trying it and maybe bouncing off, but that's interesting.
I don't know. There's something about that game, whether it's the mute protagonist, whether it's the fact that I didn't bank the first one, but then even the parts of the first one that I've seen, the whole giant alien thing at the end, nothing about it I care about. Osley and Rich did tell me what happens during Alex and the big twist at the end of Alex. No, sounds really, really cool. But other than that, I don't really know. So yeah, that'll be mine. Next question from Jacob Wright. Loving the content, boys. Thank you very much. Have you guys ever played the same game on a different console and felt that one was superior? I played Crash Sparrow, Celeste, Doom, and Bioshock on Switch, and I'm sorry, these feel better than they do on Xbox or PlayStation. Now that's madness, Jacob Wright, but I respect your right to say it.
Your heart. Bless you. That's all I can say.
I mean, to be fair, I know exactly what he means, and every time I do play something on Switch, I love it on Switch. But yeah. If I'm directly
Celeste
comparing
especially,
them.
Like, I think that's a good shout. I'm pleased I played that on Switch and not PlayStation 4, even though there's no real difference. It just kind of feels like it suits the Switch more.
Celeste is fine because it's very, like, it's very tight, very level-based platformer. It's 2D. That's all fine. But for me, Crash, Spyro, Doom, Bioshock, they're, like, you know, more bigger production titles. And playing them on Switch, I would notice the jaggies. I would notice the lack of rendering capability. And the only time I tried a bigger game on Switch was L.A. Noir, and it just looked horrific, and I returned it. And that was my attempt at that. But what do you guys think of that stuff? I guess, platform comparisons and stuff.
I said this a few weeks ago and got a surprising amount of validation for it because I thought I was going to be on my lonesome, but it's definitely Resident Evil 4 on the Wii. Resident Evil 4 with the motion controls absolutely slaps.
But we've all had a laugh, all right?
Had a fun time. I've had 3 pints made, you know, I'm completely off the deep end. That's the shout for me, I think.
Benroy, does that wound you as a Resident Evil
fan? I've heard a few people that I respect in this world say this before, and one of them being Josh, and I'm like, sure, if you want baby graphics and you want rubbish frame rates and you want to be one of those sitting in Reggie's pram as you play that game, then fine. But I mean, you're wrong.
Have you tried it? I'm curious whether there's some like amazing quality to it that we're just missing.
I've owned that. Yeah, I owned it on the Wii because my mum got my sister a Wii and I thought I might as well try the Playmobil version. And it was, you know, Fisher Price plus one. It's fine, I guess, but you're wrong. The PC version is probably the best one because then you can mouse it and almost do the same thing. But
the nearest thing for this is remembering when the first Xbox came on the scene and there was loads of third party stuff that on the Xbox was just slightly different. Like I remember Blood Omen 2 running in it rendered better. Kane's face looked a bit better. I remember the original PS1 Spider-Man when that made its way to Dreamcast. His individual fingers moved, and I was just sat there as a kid going like, I don't need that. It doesn't look better. My PS1 one looks better because I don't.
Should I concede the sink as well? Like this is another fanboy thing. The first time I played Splinter Cell games were on the PS2, and then when I saw on the Xbox, and you saw how much better some of the lighting looked,
the levels are better and everything. Yeah,
there was less check, there was less like segmenting of the levels. Yeah, I was wrong the whole time. I'm an idiot. This is why you give up on your fanboydom and just play the best version wherever you want, apart from Resident Evil 4 on the Wii.
You've got to go to where the best version is. I mean, like, if you're speaking of Splinter Cell as well, if you played Double Agent on original Xbox or 360, you played a completely different version of that game.
Yeah.
But actually, do you guys have a quick thought on which one of those is better? I actually prefer the original Xbox one. I prefer the mechanics in that game. Because the whole thing of, like, if you get caught by a guard, they do, like, a little quick time event where you can do, like, a martial arts takedown thing and get out of it. It doesn't actually count as, like, an alarm. I also thought that was a really cool mechanic they should have done more with.
I only played the PS2 version of that game.
Right.
Interesting. I've played the other one since, but I played the 360 version to death. So by default, that's my preferred version. Just because I was
never
so
actually been through the 360 version. Never.
Wow.
Never bothered. I remember one of my friends had it. I know. Well, see, one of my friends had it, and then I went to buy it, and I still had my original Xbox, so I got it on there, and I was like, "This is a great version of it." I mean, it's almost. I think it is the Chaos Theory game engine anyway, and I just never bothered. Like I have 360 Double Agent now, and I started it when I got my Series X. I did that insane launch window of just trying everything. But there's no impetus to go through it because I've already been through the best version of that game. So I don't need it. But next question from Joshua Utley, who says, what do you think it will take to steer the industry into another golden age of gaming? Golden age of gaming. Love the thoughts you all bring to the table each week. Well, thank you very much. What do you guys, yeah, what comes to mind? I guess, what do you think the industry is lacking? And what do you think would then set in motion a series of trends that would be another golden age?
I think maybe give it another 3 or so years. I think we're getting out of this Fortnite rut of like, let's make everything like Fortnite and let's make everything. I mean, there are still some big services coming out, but we're seeing creators splitting off from stuff like Rockstar and everywhere else. You got that There's No Moon or That's No Moon
That's
Games.
No Moon, yeah.
Yeah, like forming like this super team. I think like we're now, like some companies are getting so big and they're just doing the big gluttonous things, but we're also having other creators split off. Mm-hmm. And I think when we get to the mid of this generation, it'll be another one. I think like every mid of every generation is going to be someone's golden age, for example. Like I think games are always going to get better. Like we can say to death that the original like Super Nintendo is the best, but it won't be. And at one point games, I think personally, I think will always get better, mm-hmm. even though things in the past hold up significantly.
I think it's interesting, like, you know, you think of the 2000s and it was like this big boom period of like the top tier games of the 2000s was still had artistic integrity in a way that the top tier games in the 2010s didn't. And the 2010s had this big boom of indie stuff, which restored the narrative, the artistic groundwork, but without the production value. And I would hope that in the 2020s, they like hybridize the two, that you do get these big top tier titles that still have a core to them. They don't feel completely nakedly money grubby like the Avengers or Anthem or X Defiant or whatever. I would hope that those things go to the wayside. I think there's a place for them, but they've got to be done well. And I would hope that it's like a middle ground of that. Once you balance those things out and you acknowledge the greed and it gets bred out of the industry, then that would lead to a golden age where you have a some sort of nexus of the appropriate budgetary constraints, but allowing the right ideas to get through and not just sort of cutting the legs off something to release it. And release dates have to mold around that stuff. There's so much that needs to be done with making sure that the product that we get at the end of that is actually of quality as well. So it's not just a series of cyberpunks.
Yeah, totally. I think there's like a lot of work to be done, obviously, but I think it is maybe doable. And I'm hoping that we're seeing some kind of shift now. Like Ben Roy said, you know, every single generation, there's always a trend that dominates and that people follow. You know, there was modern military games after COD 4. Then there was obviously open world games. Then there were live services with Destiny and Fortnite Battle Royales and all that stuff. And I feel like, you know, now as we kind of mature beyond the initial stage of what we kind of transformed into in the late 2010s, we kind of like hopefully made all the mistakes that we could have. Like we've made the loot box mistakes. We've made the microtransactions mistakes. And I'm not saying there's going to be no more going forward, but it feels like all of those big issues have been kind of identified. All of the big mistakes have been made and you can't do it again. You can't just repeat those mistakes and expect people to continue buying things. So hopefully we learn from those mistakes in a way that makes games better. You know, microtransactions and live services, they're never going away because that just makes too much money now. Like the business model has changed to prioritize making games last and making these in-game purchases make most of your revenue. So that's never going to go away, but hopefully we find a way to be creative with it, to yes, have those elements, but make them service creative ideas, innovative ideas. I think if we get that alongside a more diversification of AAA titles, you know, moving away from only greenlighting blockbuster games and, you know, taking a risk on a few, you know, mid-tier new franchises rather than just having this gulf between indie and AAA. I think that's a step in the right direction. And then, yeah, finally, just echoing what you were saying there, Scott, about, you know, release dates and the pressure that you put on the developers to hit those release dates and crunch and everything that goes with it, because, you know, they might seem like two different problems when it comes to creativity and when it comes to the treatment like of the workers, but obviously they interlock so much. And if you've got a team that isn't allowed to be creative, is crunching for a deadline and then immediately going into the next game, or even if they're not doing that, they're immediately patching things up, updating games and getting them to where they should be, as is the case of Cyberpunk, that leads to, you know, burnout, it leads to a lack of creativity, and it leads to these games just not fulfilling their potential. So I feel like we've got to address issues from the top down, essentially. I'm not saying anything new there, but it is a massive problem, but hopefully we're shifting into the right direction.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, all that stuff, like, I mean, the one thing that the 2010s has done, obviously, there are so many insane tire fire releases, but it's still, it's shone such a light on the developers, like, getting those stories out there. The fact that Jason Schreier's really come into his own across the 2010s, and the likes of Jeff Grubb and Video Game Chronicle and all these different journalists that are being able to do those sort of reports that can highlight those issues, only benefits everybody in the long run, especially the people putting these things together, and everything that's happening with Activision Blizzard and all those kind of things, too. I would hope that going forward, there's, like, a major systemic and seismic change in regards to the making of video games and the companies behind them. Benroy, did you have anything else to throw in there?
Oh, I think I am. I think I said my thing.
Would you like a 10-minute monologue, sir? Next question from Tristan Vetter, who says, afternoon, sirs, what game were you sad about finishing all the content in, but you could have carried on playing for hours more? And this kind of follows on from what me and Josh were talking about on Monday in regards to I will not plunge the depths of side content in a game. When I hit credits, I'm done, unless it's something that really feels like I need to go mine the rest of it. But yeah, do you guys have anything that comes to mind where you hit credits and you were like, that's it, there should be more to it?
Ooh. Not in a way of I thought there should be more, but in a way of I would have definitely taken more is Disco Elysium. Like, that game is really well paced, I think, and the story wraps up really nicely. It's not too short, not too long, but I could have played it for like 80 hours. When I was finishing it, it was one of those games, you know, sometimes you finish a game and you're done with it. You're like, I don't want to look at you. I don't want to look at you, Days Gone. I want to pretend I didn't play 70 hours of you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But with Disco Elysium, it was a case of I'd finished it, and I immediately dove into the content. I was like, give me the video essays, give me the interviews with the developers, let me continue to live in this world for a little bit longer. That... And just to quickly shout out what me and you were talking about the other day, Scott, maybe even yesterday, Uncharted 4, like when I finished that single player campaign, I wanted to get the trophies and I wanted to get the platinum because I was like, I want to squeeze a little bit more content out of this. I want to enjoy this for a little bit longer.
Mine, by a landslide, is Metal Gear Solid 5. I wish that Konami, like, obviously it's because Kojima left, but I wish they'd even would have just done like base mission packs for that game. I just wanted to play more of it. I love that. That game is still hands down the most fun I've had playing a third person action game ever. I just think that the way that all the different systems interlock, the experimentation you can do with your loadouts and all the different things, like the Pokemon style, you know, like catching of soldiers who have better stats and you're getting your entire mother base stuff ranked up. Just loved all the treadmills, all the different loops that were going on in that game. And the story's complete ridiculousness. I love the whole final twist thing, but I wanted so much more, literal more length content out of the game itself.
I was going to say MGS5, but Scott just said exactly everything I was going to say. So mine will be, I think, Resident Evil, the newest one, Resident Evil 8. Mm-hmm. I think there was a bit like, there's a bit of like jumping around and then, you're sort of done. And then some more jump into certain points. You're like, well, what about this? Where was that? Are we, excuse me? Like,
I thought we're like more like more castle stuff.
Yeah, they're like, I feel like you could have gone back to the castle, but like the last quarter or last third just kind of goes, we got to finish now, sort of thing. Just about like a sprint to the finish. Mm-hmm. And I felt a bit like that with, I'm going to say Gears 5 as well. I feel like Gears 5 was missing something in the middle. I feel like you go from fads being sort of like laughing about murdering innocent civilians, but you're all right, mate. And then you're all friends. Like, it feels like there was almost a chapter missing where the Faz and JD have some sort of like redemption arc, but no, they're just friends. And we forget that they kind of like shot innocent civilians. So
they do a massive thing with that where he just comes back into the story. He's like, he's all right now. And it's just sort of like, oh, is he? Because like 2 hours ago, he was like, you know, a real piece of S. But like still, I think, that there's stuff like that where it's just sort of if they build any sort of addictive gameplay loop and then cut it off, if it doesn't feel like the whatever came together on the development side to make it satisfactory, then any of those games, all those games are totally valid. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Thank you to everybody for sending in your questions. We might do this again going forward, depending on what stories are out there. Hashtag abandoned, but we'll see what happens. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Turner.
Don't disappoint me, Caraman. Come on, let's get on it.
And Josh Brown.
Text me as soon as you know. Please, just tell me the information I need to know when it comes
I'm sure to it'll lead to a Silent Hill Metal Gear Solid Shared Universe, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Even Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.